Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Now, you might notice that my voice is high fidelity AF. I'm recording from the new What Culture HQ headquarters, which I don't even know when we're fully moving into them, but it should be across the rest of this year. I'm here right now. I've got a new microphone. Jules Gill, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, mate. I'm living vicariously through the one angle that I've seen of the new podcast room. But trust me, ladies and gentlemen, I know that you can't see this out in audio land, but it looks absolutely stunning.
There's I gave him a little laptop tour.
There's that lovely sort of like a foamy wall paneling stuff that's going on. There's exposed brickwork giving it that sort of like like hipster vibe to it. Oh, it's lovely stuff.
It's a lovely time. There's optional lighting depending on whatever's being covered. We can make it look all lovely and blue for us. And it's a lovely time. But yeah, this is the Untitled. Oh, go on.
I was going to say, what are we doing right now?
What we're doing, Jules Gill, is the Untitled Banter Podcast, the UBP, P, which is where we ask people for whatever they'd like us to talk about, whether it be certain questions or talking points or whatever's happening in the gaming industry, which the gaming industry itself continues to be very much on its backside. There's not really a whole lot going on. And a lot of games continue to get pushed into next year, including Evil Dead just got pushed back this morning. But it doesn't matter because we've still got an absolute ton of submissions. And we got loads of questions last week. So I thought we'd just roll them over to this week. I always feel sorry for when we get so many questions through. I always want to try and get to as many as possible. So why not do a bonus roll? Over. Plus, I also asked for any additional, only the juiciest questions to add to this pile. And we did get a couple of super juicy ones in there. So we'll see how many we can get through. Now, first question
the
is from.
Juiciest and Bruciest.
Juiciest. Only the finest. So the first question from Son of Kratos. With the absolute wealth of top tier indie games coming out, like Death's Door, Omno, and The Ascent, has the so called indie titles become the new AAA in terms of game quality? Now, I don't know about you, but I've been living on Death's Door and The Ascent. And I've definitely spent more time, especially across the last sort of 2 or 3 months, on indie stuff. I don't know if that's the same as you, but I would mostly agree with this, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like the thing is that when you look at the indie market, what you are really getting is lower budgets, but huge originality bonuses. I love AAA titles like your Dooms, your Doom Eternals, all of like the big name stuff that comes out. That's absolutely fine. But as you start to filter towards trying to capture as big a market as possible, you start to maybe have to make concessions on originality in order to get there. Like a lot of FPS titles, they do play the same. And apart from some like degrees of varying aesthetics, they look the same as well in terms of their HUD and layout. But you go into like the indie market and you'll find shooters that have you shooting bullets that fire enemies back through time. And then it'll be like 2D, like ricocheting stuff off the wall.
Like time only moves when you do in Super Hot.
Yeah, it's basically like indie games have this lovely ability to just go, we're choosing one gimmick and we're running with it, whereas AAA titles tend to have to be like, right, here's one gimmick, but it's a part of like 30 other ones because we're trying to hook in as many people as possible, trying to tick all these boxes. So yeah, I totally think that indie games give you that lovely slice of being able to scratch that very specific itch that you're looking for.
It's interesting because like that whole that assumption that the AAA space would be where the newest, fanciest ideas are, like, was obviously the case across the 2000s and most of the 2010s. But I feel like now the AAA space is just the most expected, the most cyclical, the most recycled stuff that you've like seen before. And like, I mean, it's not like you know, it's not like something like Death's Door is doing something that hasn't been done by, especially something like a Zelda before. But it has a level of charm and quality that I think is just so missing from the AAA space.
Yeah.
You know, there's always some bug, some glitch, some problem on launch day, whatever, that puts you off.
Do you think that they're more endearing because of the fact that we know they come from smaller studios? I mean, sometimes they
down
to like one or two people. And I think that when I know that going into a video game, I'm a lot more forgiving when it comes to bugs and visual glitches, because I think to myself, I couldn't do this, let alone some like teams of 50 to 60 people couldn't do this. And yet one or two people have spent their entire lives trying to get this game to market and it's finally here. Like that journey really infuses a game, no matter what it is, with a sense of like real sort of like, oh yeah, good on you.
Yeah, good on you.
Story that could.
That was what kind of got me through No Man's Sky, where I was like 13 people. I know that game was like on fire for a lot of people, but I like the fact that 13 people had a go. And I think that, I mean, what's the old school phrase of like too many cooks spoil the broth? It's like, well, you have like hundreds of, like a lot of people making this one broth in the AAA space. And sometimes you just need it to be smaller. I do think there's an overreach going on in regards to the overall team sizes. I just think it is bloated. And someone like Rockstar, I would rather they split off into 20 smaller teams and give me a bunch more games that are, you know, from Rockstar overall, as opposed to waiting 8 years and doing one GTA.
They split off a faction of them and they dedicate a team to making Rockstar Ping Pong 2. And yes, bring that on, mate. Bring that.
That and Max Payne. I mean, there's the two boxes that need to be ticked.
Yeah.
But yeah, overall, I would absolutely say that indie has right now eclipsed AAA in regards to overall game quality, in regards to like bugs, glitches, feeling that the thing you have in front of you is a piece of quality content, as opposed to you can throw it right up against the likes of Cyberpunk or something else, as just dropping the ball. Next question from McAllister from New York City: is Earl Grey the proper British tea, or is it English breakfast, or are both just a way to make us silly Yanks feel posh?
The thing is that like the Americans have got a real sort of fascination with our fascination of tea. Like, yes, we love it, and it is pretty much our lifeblood, which makes blood transfusions very, very difficult in the NHS when they have to go like, oh, sorry, your blood type, your tetley doesn't match.
Your tea, not getting decaf,
like sort of thing. But when it comes to Earl Grey, I find that that is incredibly powerful, potent tea. So I only have it on very special occasions.
It's very flowery.
Well, it's kind of just like you wouldn't sit down and start your meal with a scotch, would you? You wouldn't like bash a shot down before having your meal. So like sitting down sometimes and looking at an Earl Grey, it kind of like, you know, like when people say like drinking Guinness is like a pie in a can.
Yep.
It feels like that, but for tea. It's like,
I that whole thing of like, what's the proper British tea? For me, it's going to be like Tetley's or PG Tips or something. It's not like, it's not fancy stuff. I think that's the assumption. I think that's the peripheral view of the UK, that we're all like little fingers out. We're drinking these tiny little shots of tea. And I think it was, for me, it's a mug of tea and it's like a Tetley's. Yeah, it's a proper brew.
If we're saying like, what is the atypical British tea, then you've got to think of like your sort of like your truck driver tea.
Exactly.
It's not a mug. It's a pint of tea. It's a pint of tea with about 20 sugars in, a bit of like Benson and cigarettes called?
Benson and Hedges.
Benson and Hedges, like crinkled up, sprinkled around the rim like a cocktail. Yeah.
I would say the actual proper British tea is Tetley's. And knowing my luck, Tetley's is probably from a different country altogether. But in my head, it's something like that. It's a proper brew. Something where you've let my dad used to always say that you sort of let it brew long enough until the spoon can stand up in it. And then you know that it's got the right kind of strength. But something like that. Next question from Karel Taib CR. Hopefully I've got that name right. Which is a far more serious subject matter, who just says, what do you guys think of the whole Activision Blizzard situation? Should gamers boycott games made by them? And then he just says also, have you ever tried any Indonesian food? So we should definitely start with the Indonesian food and get that out of the way. Otherwise, it's going to be right in the middle of everything else.
Sure. I have tried Indonesian food before. I absolutely love it. It's like, if I'm remembering correctly, it's like a steamed bun style dish that I had that was Indonesian. It came with a very, very spicy sauce. You basically lift the bun up and it was like you dip the bun into it and eat it that way. And I was, I would be butchering the pronunciation if I tried. But yeah.
Do you know what? I love a bit of dipping. Like I just saw the other day, I just sort of got like I got a bunch of meats in. I got a bunch of different like sort of like sweet chutneys in, like savory chutney things. Mm-hmm, and I just dipped all the meats in it. And I was like, this is, why do we not do this more? This is brilliant.
Well, people did that before, but they were usually like very, very rich and reserved for the King of Spain, mate. I mean, like what you just described there. Oh, open up my finest chutney collection. Bring in the meats. The way that you said, like, I got some meats over. It's like, oh, phoning up the lads. Get the meats in, lads. Come on,
I want a selection of meats.
But the salami, I mean,
it's still wafer thin stuff. So it's not like I'm sitting there with like, you know, a specific slice of like a really fancy hog roast or anything. It's just wafer thin chicken with a mango chutney. I'm just putting them.
Oh, that's a delicious combo.
Put them all together. In regards to the Activision Blizzard stuff, the amount of, I mean, because like I said, I'm pulling some questions from last week, but the amount of stuff that's happened, even in last week, like imminently, endlessly proud of the amount of ground they've been able to cover, just standing their ground and just saying, and managing to do the protest. And they had a whole bunch of support from, obviously, games journalists, even different people in the local area came out to support them. And they've managed to, there's quite a lot of things happened that J. Allen Brack has stepped down, who's like a long-term CEO or whatever. And they've appointed some different people in the right sort of positions. There is still that whole ongoing thing with the woman whose name I forget, who put out the initial really tone-deaf responses, just saying like, oh, none of this is valid, and sort of tweeting it, retweeting it, an article on whistleblowing and just saying that it wasn't, and none of it was valid. Clearly it is valid. It was always valid. There's obviously a root, you know, toxic mentality to the idea of frat boy culture and minimizing women in any space, let alone the workspace. And yeah, I'm just endlessly proud of them. So I think that I'm glad that they've been able to get some things sorted. Because I mean, anything to do with bullying and making someone feel small, I'm always going to be like, to the core, I'm like, well, I've been through that and it was horrible. Yeah. And so I'm, yeah, stand up to the likes of these people. I'm glad they have.
Yeah, I think that it speaks as well to the volumes of which social media empowers people to be able to actually get these thoughts out there. Like, it must have been an incredibly arduous and horrible experience to go through for the first people to start putting out their messages to try and gain support for this and get this like movement going. So it's a wonder to the people that are on social media being able to get that in front of people, to get it to the, into the hands that matters, which are, at the end of the day, the consumers of these games, and make them aware that your video games may come presented with a package of sweet friendliness and these companies try to pretend to be your friends, but there is a lot going on behind closed doors that you aren't ever going to be privy to. Mm-hmm. And it is important for the industry to maintain this transparency as much as possible. It's horrible that we have to witness like what's
that it
going
took
on,
this. Yeah,
that it
yeah.
took this to go through to get to that. But you've got to look at it as being like a smelling salt situation. It wakes you up to the current current industry at large. And hopefully it empowers people to start dialogues easier in their own workspace, to stand up for themselves, to unionize in ways that allows them to approach their heads up without fear of repercussion, of being fired, being exposed, being treated like less than they're worth. And hopefully this will be a movement that improves the industry going forward.
That's the thing as well. Yeah, it just seems like this is such a, like, and obviously there's all the wider mentalities that come with frat boy type stuff. But in regards to Activision Blizzard, like, you know, there are all these clips that are surfacing of their general treatment of women over the years, like whether it's old reviews on Glassdoor or that clip that did the rounds from, I think it was a 2010 panel, and where they just sort of belittled a woman in the audience that was trying to ask a question about the way that women were dressed in World of Warcraft. Like, there are instances of that toxic mentality across their history, and that really sucks. It's clearly been a problem for a long time. And I'm just glad that it's being addressed. In regards to, you know, whether you should boycott the games, buy them, I mean, it's obviously, it's a personal decision. You can do whatever you want. Me personally, like, I'm always just like, well, someone put their time and effort into coding or the art design or whatever, and I don't want to tar an entire company with that same brush. That's not to discount the reality of the stories that have come out. Like, the amount of stuff that is out there does point to an overall company-wide problem with Blizzard. But yeah, there's that whole thing where I'm like, if I was someone who was working on a game and all this horrific stuff happened, I would hate if I was lumped in with those people. It's like, well, I was just trying to do my job and I'm not about XYZ over there. I'm just trying to do this thing. And maybe you can't be that innocent and maybe you can't separate it. But my personal thoughts are it's case by case, game by game.
Again, I would have to echo that it is case by case, because it's like the classic case of separating the art from the artist. People we know in popular media have, not personally, I'm just saying that we know of in popular media, have done some incredibly horrible things, and yet their music, their art, their literature, whatever, will go on to still become like worldwide massive successes. It is up to you to make a personal stand. If you do not feel like a company is worth your time because it has betrayed the very core elements that make up your morality or your ethics system, then by all means, we fully support your choice to do that, as well as I support your choice for voicing your concerns on social media and getting others to join your cause. I can't speak for anyone. All I can say is that my personal experience with the likes of Ubisoft, I haven't touched an Ubisoft title since the whole sort of well, massive wrongness that was going on behind the scenes there. And until I see an actual tangible change within that company, I personally will pass on any review stuff that comes up for them. Mm-hmm. That's just my thing. It's with Activision and Blizzard. I don't actually play the Call of Duty games. I don't play World of Warcraft. I don't play Overwatch. So I'm kind of just like, I'm out of the loop already with that company. And it's mainly been tarred because of the fact that I didn't like either company to begin with because of the money grubbing tactics. And now it just feels like it's backed up by an ethical standpoint as well.
Which is, I think it's completely valid. I think for me, just on it, it feels like a weird thing to say, but it's like, oh, I'm going to disconnect all this horrific stuff and go, okay, but what's the game like though? And just sort of like do that. And I get that that is a really weird, awkward trajectory to try and like carve through all this stuff. But for me, there is still a base reality of a bunch of people working on a thing. And I want to see what those people have made under the proviso that not all of them are complete, you know, toxic wrongins.
Yeah. It's completely, what's it called? You almost have to adopt a very strange fluid approach to it because you, like, I'm not going to have a go at you, for example. Say you said to me, like, oh, let's go and play Call of Duty. Mm-hmm. Like, I would want to play a game with you sort of thing. Right. Like, and I wouldn't judge you for liking Call of Duty despite what had gone on with Activision Blizzard. But I would always be reminded of the fact that what went on has transpired.
Yeah, yeah. I think as well, it's for me, it depends on how much things come through. Like, if you're literally, if it comes to the point where during these cases, we pinpoint specific people, which has already started to happen, and those people had specific input on a character design that then already felt maybe a bit objectionable or a little bit ridiculous, let's say, because there's obviously lots of already over sexualized females in Overwatch, for example, and if they were put together by someone who was later proven to be someone who played a part in all these horrific real life events, then I'm going to look differently upon that character and the way that they were put together. So I think that but it's literally case by case. I'm all about like the specificity, but again, it's not to discount the reality of what's happened. I absolutely stand with the people standing up for themselves, and I mentioned like bullying before. I kind of liken anything to like, you know, bullying or making someone feel small. And that's kind of like most of us know what that feels like to some degree. And obviously it's not the same, but you know, you do have that sort of like anything that makes another human being feel small, like at the absolute base level before you do any of this other stuff, I'm always going to be like, dude, like what the hell? Like,
yeah, exactly.
We need to fix this.
I think what makes me the most angry about all of this, though, is that aside from a few people who will be like the faces who will get fired or transitioned within the company to different projects, like you say, if everyone stops supporting certain franchises, it's studios and the workers that will feel the punishment of it. They'll be their sections will be closed down. They'll have their contracts terminated.
Get moved on to something else.
They'll get moved on to something else that they might make them incredibly unhappy. And it sucks that they are the people that take the brunt of these sort of responses. They are the people that should benefit coming out of the other side of this with better like work environments, better treatment, better pay, better working hours. Mm-hmm. And yet it's going to be the higher ups that are going to be trying to protect other higher ups, like that will just be like, okay, we just don't get our bonuses this month. Sort of.
Well,
thing, like,
yeah, that's the thing. That, you know, they're barely affected by it. Like, you know, Bobby Kotick stepping in, oh yeah, it's time we did something about it. It's like, well, you've been completely disconnected from reality for the last 30 years, but like, I get that it's not starting to, like, the main way that you can, if you, you know, make a point of boycotting is be part of the message, the overall message that is going on. It's conversations like this, it's social media, it's all that kind of stuff, because all that stuff affects the shareholders, which is the most direct way you can get back to Activision Blizzard. Which is one of the main reasons that they're taking so much action, because they had such a drop off in shareholder value. So it's you're already doing your part potentially by being part of conversations online. And so, yeah, it's an ongoing thing. And obviously, it's only been part of the discourse for the last sort of few weeks. But we'll see whatever happens going forward. So far, though, great strides have been made, and the people that are standing up for themselves could not be more proud of them. Like, personally.
Okay,
next question from G Tro, who said, I just got myself a secondhand PlayStation 2 and need recommendations for games. It came with GTA San Andreas and Black. Any suggestions?
Oh,
Black is a deep cut.
That is a nice combo of games, my friends. I mean,
I would say get Def Jam.
Oh yeah, Def Jam, Fight for New York.
Yeah,
surely.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Fight for New York, totally. I like Vendetta too, but Fight for New York is, I just, the other day, I think maybe it was when we were talking last week, something reminded me of old school arcade sports games, and where the living hell has Def Jam gone? Like where that was so good.
No,
was so good.
Oh, we had Def Jam Icon, which absolutely buried the
I did sort of bury it a bit.
It was the slowest fighter I'd ever played. I was just like, oh man, this is boring.
Dance battles.
Yeah. Bad times. Definitely get yourself either SSX Tricky or SSX 3. Pick up yourself a copy of God Hand. Get Okami.
Get Okami, yeah.
Metal Gear Solid 2 and 3. Get... Come on,
I'm trying to think of stuff that like...
Jack and Daxter 1 and 2. Don't go for 3. You said, 3 like, actually, no, get Jack Axe Combat Racing. That game needs some love.
Jack Axe is actually all right. Like, consider, I think for me, I was expecting a Crash Team Racing, but like, it is solid. It's fine. I think like as a continuation of Jack, it's good.
Yeah. Silent Hill 2, get that.
Yes.
Zone of Enders 1 and 2, get them.
this is just amazing. The best games on PS2. Get God of War while you're on.
I know. We're basically just listing stuff that we have played that we absolutely adore. I'm trying to think of like the deep cuts that didn't get enough love.
Get yourself a G-Con 45 and get Time Crisis.
Boom. Time Crisis, yes. Mad Dog.
Sorry,
I'm going to derail this and tell everyone at home. Have you heard the story about Mad Dog?
No, I don't think so. The story.
Right, okay. Right. Well, mate, there's a story. Right. So we all know and love Mad Dog from Time Crisis. Like he appears, he's got his trench coat. He's got his tiny little like Morpheus from the Matrix glasses.
Very 2000s.
Absolutely love him. He explodes in the first game and you're like, oh, he's done. Wait, no, he's back. He's got a bionic arm now. Sick.
Has he?
And then, yeah. And then it goes to Time Crisis 3. It becomes an even more graphic bionic arm that's got like a rocket launcher or a Gatling gun underneath it, right? You kill him. All the way through the series, he keeps coming back and you start thinking to yourself, what the hell is going on? How can we not kill this guy? Like, he survives so many explosions that you're just going like, there's got to be something up here. Mm-hmm. So I did some research and I was thinking to myself, is it just because Time Crisis isn't to be taken too seriously? Turns out they take it very seriously, but they also, whoever makes these games are off the rails, man. They are off the rails, mate. Because apparently, according to some insider sources, the reason that Mad Dog keeps coming back alive is because his soul escapes from hell every single time. He literally gets sent to hell and fights his way out of hell again.
There's Time Crisis lore, that there's like a long form. I mean, how long has that been going? Like 20 years? Like more than that? I mean, I played it on PS1 initially. No, I didn't know the history of Mad Dog. I love that that's a thing, though. That reminds me of like Freddy Krueger, like starting out more as just a regular killer man and becoming like a supernatural dude. Crazy. But in terms of like, yeah, like a sort of overlooked PS2 stuff, it would, I mean, I feel like Def Jam's fairly overlooked. I would still point to, I think I mentioned Freak Style and stuff last week.
Yeah, man.
But yeah, you can't, the PS2 is the highest selling console of all time for a reason.
You should get, here's some deep cuts for you.
I've just thought of one.
Smuggler's Run.
Yes. That Rockstar's original stuff.
That game is sick.
That game was great for like 2001. I don't know if it holds up now.
It might not now, but I remember
it. It was great back then, yeah.
And get yourself Cell Damage, which is
such a show.
A vehicular combat game, but all your cars are cartoons.
Get the Splinter Cell series. And also, last one, Taz Wanted. I'm throwing in Taz Wanted. Something reminded me of Taz Wanted the other day, and I was like, there was a whole Taz. Where did the Looney Tunes games go? That's another thing. Like, just where did they go? Taz got his own game, Taz Wanted. Cell shaded. It was great. Disappeared.
Oh, with Busters on the Loose or whatever it's called for the SNES. It was like the
Looney the little Tunes blue kids. Rabbit. Yeah.
Whatever they're called. That was a wicked game.
There was like a whole thing. Looney Tunes Racing, Bugs and Taz Time Busters, Bugs Bunny's own game. Yeah, like, they just, where have they gone? Bring them back. Where'd they go? That's all the PS2 recommendations.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Next question from Jack Asbury. Who here is really looking forward to the Steam Deck? Reckon this could signal the revival of handheld consoles. Maybe a PS Vita 2 or something similar. Keep up the good work, lads at UBP. Well, thank you very much. Terms of signal the revival of handheld consoles, the Switch is the highest selling system in the world right now. So I would say that's going, but I guess he means in a wider sense.
Yeah. I guess you mean handheld consoles as it's only handheld.
Yeah.
Like, because the docking feature of the Switch does, it gets used more often than not, I would say, wouldn't it?
Because I love,
You were saying that a lot of people didn't use the docking thing.
I did. Well, only for my little Twitter poll, I did a thing of like, what do most people do? And it was just play handheld. Josh only plays handheld. And I'm just like, how are you playing a Zelda and not putting it on the screen? But in regards to Steam Deck stuff, I'm curious with that because, I mean, I've got one. I've bought one. It hasn't arrived yet. It's going to be later this year, next year.
I didn't but get like, a chance, unfortunately. I missed out.
Oh, see, I didn't realize that they were going off how long you'd had Steam. So because I'd had it since like 2004 or something, it was like, oh, you're like a long-time member. So I got access to that initial quantity of pre-order stuff.
I didn't.
Luckily. So I have one. So I'm kind of investing in it. For me, though, it is just a portable Steam library. It's like what the Steam machine was going to be. But I don't know. It's weird because on the Sony side, they're doing another PSVR, but they haven't said anything about Vita, doing another Vita. And the amount of money the Vita lost them, I wonder if they're just like, not anymore.
It's a real shame because the Vita is phenomenal console. It just didn't get the support or love that it deserved already. It could be said of so many other consoles back in the day. But I wish I could get on board with the Steam Deck because I really want one and I think I want it more than I do a Switch because of the fact that the concept of me being able to travel up to see you guys in Newcastle and playing Fallout New Vegas on the train up, that blows my mind. I want to get that.
I like that. I was thinking I can, because it's PC architecture, I can play the original Fallouts finally and I can get I can have the original Deus Ex on the way into work or whatever. Like, mate, I want that.
I can't wait for you to start playing the original Fallout games and then message me just going, this is so hard. This is unfair. What is going on here?
I've seen like enough footage of it to know that it's nothing like what Bethesda did, but I'm just kind of like...
It is madness.
Yeah.
Like,
I was watching a fight against the Master and I was just like, click here, stand exactly here. Or you've got shot from behind. Like, I'm sure it'll be a good laugh. But yeah, I personally, really looking forward to it. And I'm curious what happens from here on out. I feel like the Vita was way ahead of its time, but Sony just killed it with... They had like separate memory cards that you had to get from them. And it was like, dude, what are you doing? Next question from Jem Duduku, who says, what's the best food related game / mini game in video games?
Hands down, Overcooked.
Because
that's all the food and it's stressful and it's fun and things get set on fire and you can throw your teammates off of like little bridges and stuff like that.
Were you in the Fruit Ninja pop? You know, when there was that big old sort of
to remember Fruit Ninja?
That was the thing. I mean, we're pretty much the same age, but me and you, when it was a thing when we were in, when I was in university, it was, oh my God, Fruit Ninja. And I've still never played it to this day. But when I think of like food related games in my head, I see fruit being cut in midair. I feel like that's like a big deal. So I'm thinking of that, but I'm sure there was a mini game in Bishi Bashi Special where you make burgers, and I used to love that.
Yeah.
Where it was you hit X circle, and it was like heart, like you know, patty, lettuce, whatever.
Yeah, big love to Burger Time on the NES. That's a good game.
Biggest love to Burger Time. Big love to Overcooked, like you said, Cookin' Mama as well.
Ninja Bread Man. Do you remember Ninja Bread Man?
No. Oh,
Ninja Bread Man was a PS2 game, which was like an action platformer, but you just were like going around killing people. But you,
I love that like name.
Based. That's great.
Do you reckon they thought of that name first? And it's like, well, we can't let this go. 100%. We're going to have to do something about it. Next question from Kings Cross Road, who says, I just had a son and we named him Dante. Awesome.
Hey,
so I have a brother, call him Virgil. My question is, what video game names are too much for actual children to have? I'm going to say Alucard.
Aloy. don't call a real life kid Aloy. Like,
Solid Snake, maybe? Ninja Bread Man, funnily enough.
Ninja Bread Man, yeah, 100%. I mean, Solid Snake is definitely up there. Ocelot.
His real name's Dave, funnily enough, for Solid Snake.
What's Raiden's name? Is it Sam?
Does he have a full name?
I put him on the spot. I think he picks a name at the end of Metal Gear Solid 2.
It's Jack. It's Jack. Because it's Jack. He's like, do you want to meet Jack the Ripper? He does all that stupid stuff where he starts talking like this.
That's so bad when he does that. This is the thing with Metal Gear, is that there are so many moments that you're like, yes, mate, that was absolutely brilliant. But there are also moments that are so cringeworthy.
I can round out the name thing too. Don't call your kid Hot Coltman. Or maybe do. And then they'd be shoot gunner, maybe.
Fat man, come here.
He's like, yeah. I mean, to be fair, if you owned it, you could absolutely be fat man. Like, who's coming to the party? Fat man, I'll be there. Like, I'm there. I'm there from minute one.
Do you mean Scoop or from our school?
That's what the soundtrack is. Next question from Travis Nichols, going for max juiciness question. He does say, this is kind of referencing the Blizzard stuff, with issues in the industry like crunch, microtransactions, power versus performance, and also the harassment stuff, what are your general thoughts? Do you think that hardware is raising expectations of the higher-ups in a negative way, creating worse working conditions?
Yes, 100%. Yes, but I want to tackle this head-on, mate.
Yeah, man, do it.
Because of the fact that I've said many, many times that the rule of thumb is that we should not be made to pay your bill. That is my mantra going forward as a consumer in the video game industry. Because with the ballooning budgets for titles that are informed by hardware and hardware expectations and what people would therefore expect from those games that are on those new hardware, it means that they just get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Mm-hmm. And as such, we are therefore meant to be recouping the losses of these video games because they will be more microtransactions will be put into them. More emphasis will be put on graphics over gameplay because they want it to look really nice and slick because it's the easiest way to draw people in. And it will also mean that we'll have just basically tons of features missing that then can be included back in for, like you say, seasonal content or patches and stuff like that. So,
no, man, the thing that I guess I would want more exploration into is company by company practices. Like, how much is it a culture of crunch? How much are you expected to put extra hours in? Is that resulting in a mentality or a general sort of feeling where you can't prioritize your own well-being, your own mental health, your own space away from the job? Because it was an interesting thing when all the stuff about Last of Us 2's crunch came out. Great interview with Neil Druckmann and Troy Baker. I think it was over on Kind of Funny. Neil Druckmann said, like, look, you know, we put in place specific procedures to avoid crunch. Like, you have to go home. You can't work on this thing. And the employees, specific employees, like, said, like, look, we want to work on this. Like, this is my passion project. I want to put the time in. So I think it's an ongoing conversation. And it's like, it is that thing where if this is the industry that you've got into and sometimes you want to just work a bit more, that sort of push and pull can be massively taken advantage of. And you see that, and there are a million stories of it. But I think as that whole idea of, like, you know, if we're taking on this 5 to 7 year project and we want to, then is there a space to be able to go all out? And, like, is that a choice on the worker, on the coder, on the artist, versus we're trying to match the shareholder expectations, so we need you to stay behind for an extra 3 hours? I think it's a very case-by-case basis, company-by-company basis.
I'd really like to see a more clarity when it comes to performance-related pay as well. If companies could advertise far in advance for each project and make that information readily available, that, like, either shares, dividends, extra overtime pay, extra holiday compensation would be given upon completing stuff within certain time limits, then I feel like it will alleviate a lot of crunch. I was going to use the word fear, but it's not a fear because it's a reality.
It's like the whole thing with, like, Red Dead and Rockstar's culture, where until it became public that they didn't put people's names on the credits if you left before the game shipped, which for a game that takes 8 years to be put together, was massively insulting to the people that might have given 7 years to that game.
Yeah.
And so that thing, you know, like they shone a light on the way that they sort of like approach that idea of like recompense or like even if it's just a general reputational thing. But like you said, bonus structures, like that's obviously company by company. But something that Sean Layden was talking about, the ex, what Jim Ryan is now doing, like Sony's CEO, Sony's PlayStation CEO, or the face of PlayStation. Sean Layden was just saying that the way that budgets are now doesn't allow for the likes of, and his examples were Parappa the Rapper or Vib Ribbon. He's like, those are two of my favorite games, and they just would not get greenlit anymore because of the amount of money being thrown into these things. And he's very candid about just saying, like, the way that the industry is not sustainable. You can't have people on average 5 to 7 year turnarounds. It has to be smaller teams, smaller budgets, and better, more unique ideas. You can't live on endless sequels and massive gambles.
Well, that's why I found it very confusing that we were hyped to the nines about how the new series of consoles was going to be focusing on originals and original developments, and yet we've not actually seen anything of those indie titles really crop up from it.
Like, no, not too handful, much. Yeah.
But I remember it was Microsoft especially that was like, we're pushing for these originals. We're having all of these original development teams. Mm. Like Square Enix came out and said, we have got about what they called RPG Factory, where they literally are kicking out RPGs. And yet we've only seen like two or three titles come from them. And it's just like, I don't know.
I'm still glad they exist. I guess it depends how it's
100%,
done.
But it's...
In that regard, that model they took actually was what I would like someone like Rockstar or Naughty Dog to do. Like, I would love a sequence of Naughty Dog games rather than waiting years and years and years for another Last of Us. I would love to see what someone like a Neil Druckmann, you know, Bruce Straley, Halle Gross could put out in between those years. Like, I think that's the future. I would hope that that's the future, because I just think it's insane metrics to do this, to sort of put all your eggs in this one insane opulent basket, that in the case of Cyberpunk completely fails. And there's been more high profile failures than there's been successes across the last few years.
Like, it seems like on paper, the most obvious thing to do would be a one-off, one-on thing where it's like, work on a
Christopher Nolan title approach.
And then you maybe do like two titles off where you split the team into two and they both like do that. Yeah. You could incentivize it and just be like, hey, look, it's like a friendly competition between them sort of thing.
Yeah, the thing that's happening right now in Naughty Dog is that they are remaking The Last of Us because they need time before Neil Druckmann and the rest of them decide what they're doing as the next big project. Which is insane. It's like, well, can't you just do something original? Like, we don't need The Last of Us again. Like, we've already got a remaster.
We literally just got a remaster.
So it's like that whole thing. I just want more originality. I want more original ideas. And it ties back into the indie space because it's like so many really cool game mechanics come in the indie space, but they don't have the spotlight of the AAAs. They don't have the reputation boost of the bigger developers, and there's so much more that could be done there. A final question from Jacob Wright, who says, UBP, 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 you're doing well. Have there been any games of which you've had to take a break from, then you come back and have no idea where you are? I've had to restart Breath of the Wild for the fifth time.
Yeah, hundreds and hundreds of times. I've just like been like, I wonder what my last save was. And I'm like, I don't have it.
I did this just the other day.
Mass Effect was my one with that one.
Right.
I blitzed through Mass Effect 2. Sort of had a stop-start relationship with Mass Effect 3. Mm-hmm. Mass Effect 1, because it was like, I don't know, I found it the most unpolished of the three. Mm-hmm. I did find it a bit of a slog in some areas, and I left it for like a month or two. I think I was just off video games at that point for a bit. Sometimes I like to take a bit of a break from it all, and then came back to it and just was like, I have no idea who half of these characters are. Like, what's going on here?
I did that in, I don't know if you've played Blasphemous, but it's like a 2D Souls style thing. Yeah, love that game. And I banked about 5.5 hours into it, and I was like, this is absolutely brilliant. And for whatever reason, I moved off it, because that game came out in 2019. So I guess it was just up against Death Stranding, whatever else came out in 2019. And I went back to it the other day because Josh just went through it, and I was like, I'm going to go back and I'm going to polish off that game because it's not that long. And I already have the map is already fully explored, or at least I think there's another map, but like whatever, I've done most of it. And I went back to that game and I was like, I don't know where I was going. I don't know what, I just have no idea. Like, it's like in any Metroidvania, if there's no marker telling you where to go, it's like, well, I'm then just scouring the map for like a point of a corridor that doesn't look like it's been explored. And so like, that's where I am right now. I'm just running around in Blasphemous, just going like, is the game around here? Like, is it hidden around this corner? Like, I have no idea. One extremely quickly final question from last week. Mr. Jules Gill from Greg Fingerguns, what dog is the best gaming dog?
Right. Okay. So it is a tough choice to narrow them down. But recently I spoke at great length about Yojimbo from Final Fantasy X's dog, Daigoro, which is absolutely, I love the design of him. I think he's absolutely brilliant. And the fact that he can just run along and just hurl his body and just smash into enemies, depending on how much you pay Yojimbo. It's great.
I see another
Final Fantasy X dog, a Final Fantasy dog in is Rinoa's dog.
The little
I think mine's Sparky or something like that.
Right. I would say Akami's technically a wolf, so I guess he doesn't really count. But the one I was going to say is I see your Daigoro and I raise you Shadow from Dead to Rights, the dog that can bring you weapons, can rip people's nuts off, go for the throat and do kills, will save you when you're someone's grappling you or whatever in the middle of that game. Shadow for me is by far the best dog. I think he can even defuse bombs and stuff. Shadow from Dead to Rights is a massive shout. Thank you to everybody for sending in their various questions. We still have more we might do. I'm not going to do another rollover to next week. We'll get some new stuff in. But thanks to everybody for sending things in. This has been the Untitled Banter Podcast, the UBP. Ivan Scott Tailford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll catch you all next week.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.